I'm Shirley Roberts, and you're listening to the Port of Solier radio programme on Boat Radio. Today I have the great pleasure of welcoming my friend and the leader of music of Mallorca, Georgie Insel, to Solier. Georgie, you're very welcome, and I hope you're going to tell us a very good story.
I'll try and make one up for you then, Shirley.
You don't have to make one up, because I happen to know that there's a huge boating story of your life. And I happen to know that you were married to a sailor who sailed the seven seas and took you all sorts of places in the world. So tell us the story of where sailing came into your life from a very young age, I understand.
Well, from a very, very young age, my father was a sailor. He unfortunately died before I was born. And then during my growing up years, I was always told, nice girls don't marry sailors. But of course I did. I met my husband, he was already sailing. And yes, it's true, we did go to several places.
You met by the water, I believe, in Hampshire. And I believe there's a story that says that Tony Insel saw this wonderful lady with a pint of beer and thought, that's the lady for me. Is that true?
It's absolutely true. I didn't have a pint of beer. I had a brown ale. And we were in Plymouth. We weren't in Hampshire.
We were in wrong location.
We were in a bar in Plymouth. And he was at one table. I was at another table. He was with a group of friends. I was with a girlfriend. I had just finished my shift at a Greek restaurant where I waitressed for a summer. And he just came over and he said, you shouldn't be drinking that. And he bought me a vodka.
And that was the beginning of the love affair that's lasted all these years.
All these many years, yes.
Something like 50?
It's more like 52.
Okay. Tell us the story, what happened then. You were training to be a teacher. You're also a singer. You're also a performer in all respects. Then Tony just took you around the world. So where did you start from? Where did you go?
Well, we started in Hampshire, as you said. We were there for 2 or 3 years. And then he joined submarines. And if you were in submarines, then you were allowed to take your wives when you were posted overseas. We were lucky enough to be posted to Singapore. I leapt at the chance. We went there for a year. We came back. And to cut a long story short, we were told we'd probably never go away again. And so we sold that house and bought another one. We'd been in that house for only about 2 weeks when we got posted to Australia.
And in Australia, you were there long enough to get a job yourself, I believe, in a girls' school?
I was only in the girls' school for about 3 weeks.
What, did you get the sack?
No. I was there for about 3 weeks. It was a great school called Manly Girls, and they moved me then to Manly Boys.
Ah.
And I stayed in Manly Boys for the next 2 years, yes.
So did you have children at this point?
I did. I had the two boys, yeah. They were, when we went to Australia, they were 6 and 8. That's right. When we left there, they were 8 and 10, obviously.
Mm-hmm. So Singapore first, Australia, then what?
Scotland. Oh, no, Scotland was in between. We had 18 months in Scotland, which was freezing after Singapore. And then after Australia, we were back in Hampshire, yes.
But this is where music came into your life big time. I mean, you're a musician anyway. You're a musician by training and also teacher training.
Absolutely correct. But music was way before then. I mean, it was always there, always. From my mum taking me to sit on the steps in the Palace Theatre in Plymouth, watching opera. Same operas, the same two operas were brought twice a year. We went twice a year and we sat on the steps in the Gods. And we watched the same two operas each time.
Which two operas?
It was Faust and Carmen.
Right, so you know it well then.
I know Carmen backwards, I think, so I can't remember Faust at all.
So there, your own music training, your own voice training, started at school. And then when you went to college yourself, so this was, you came to college in London to be a teacher.
Yeah.
And you played an instrument that was bigger than you, I believe.
Yeah, I played the string bass. And that was fun. I really enjoyed that. I enjoyed that probably more than singing in a choir, was playing in an orchestra, because that's really good fun.
Did you go anywhere with the bass? Did you play in Kenwood or any of the auditoriums in London?
No, but I was booked to play in Billericay.
Right. Okay, so that's a magic moment for you.
Yeah, yes.
Playing the bass in Billericay.
But I only played it once. Right. Surprise, surprise.
So your own career, how did that coincide with Tony's then, while he was off doing his sailing?
As you say, he was off doing his sailing. And so while he was doing his sailing, I joined things. I joined musical societies, and I didn't join a choir. I was kicked out of a choir a long time before because my voice was too strong for the rest of them.
Really? What a surprise.
Yes. So I just joined societies, and I was in a pantomime in Singapore. The best pantomime I've ever seen as an amateur thing, because it was in the dockyard. I actually went to join the Naval Base Society, but my car slipped into a drain. Yeah. Outside this hall where I could hear singing, and I went in and I got these guys to come out and pull my car out and said, what's going on here? And they said, oh, it's the Dockyard Musical Society. And so within a minute or two I joined them, and within a week I was singing the lead in the pantomime.
Wow, that's absolutely fantastic.
And I've had the best giant you've ever seen, professionally or amateur, in that one, because of course they had all the equipment and stuff and all the facilities to build the sets. And we were accompanied by the Royal Marine Band. Come on.
So Gareth Malone wasn't the first in getting the military wives working then?
Not at all, not at all. We all had great fun.
Now, there's a story that a little bird told me about a very special performance of Hello Dolly. Tell us about that.
I don't remember it. Oh, just every hotel we go to that's got a lovely staircase, I sing Hello Dolly coming down the stairs.
Wasn't there one where Barbara Streisand is supposed to have said that you were the best Hello Dolly in amateur performance that she'd seen?
No, that was not the person at all. The person who said that to me was...
Oh, sorry.
...was after I performed as Nelly in, South Pacific.
Oh, right, the wrong show,
Mary Martin.
Mary Martin.
...was plugging a book, and she realised that there was, or somebody told her that there was an amateur performance. She came to the matinee and was standing off the stage when I came off after doing the weepy bit.
Right, okay, so you're in South Pacific, Mary Martin is in. So tell us who Mary Martin is.
Oh, come on. Mary Martin was the original Nelly, an American lady, mother, I should say, of Larry Hagman, who was JR. And she was the original Mary Martin. She was the original Nelly in South Pacific.
So which one's Nelly? Does she wash her hair?
Yes. Yes.
So she washes. Okay, fine. So you are the best. You are the original and the best, as far as she's concerned, in an amateur performance.
Yes.
Right. So where was your agent? Why weren't you signed up? Why didn't you do this professionally?
Never.
Why not?
Because I never went ahead with anything. Hmm. I was offered chances to audition for different people, and I just thought it was not for me, because I wouldn't want to sing in the... I'm not going to say this.
Go on.
I was going to say... Well, you can cut it out. The back row of a chorus. I'd have to be the lead.
Actually, I think that is something that needs to stay in this interview, because that really sums Georgie Insull up.
Oh, shut up. That's not nice.
It may not be nice, but it's true.
It's not.
Oh, right. OK, so we're now charting the course with your husband, who's coming to the end of his career with the Navy.
With the Navy, yes.
So then it's retirement beckons.
Retirement beckoned, and he started off by trying to be a travel agent, and that did not work. It was not for him, and it was not for us. And then his brother, who was already a crew agent, had a crew agency in France, rang him one day out of the blue and said, Tony, I've got a job where the boss needs someone just like you who's qualified enough to find things wrong and actually put them right. He was fed up with the engineers bringing in experts every 5 minutes.
So you're talking about a boat engineer job?
Yes.
But this is not on a boat, this is on a posh yacht?
This is on a very posh yacht, yes.
And how long was the yacht relationships? Many years, I believe.
He was on the same yacht for 22 years. He'd been in the Navy for 22, so he stayed on the same yacht for 22, yeah.
So he retired from his full-time job and then took an even more full-time job, which actually took him the Mediterranean for the summer and the Caribbean for the winter.
Yeah.
So then that starts another journey for you, because you went all over the place.
True. Well, only to the south of France or to...
The Caribbean,
yeah. Well, not the Caribbean even, just to America, you know. Fort Lauderdale and Florida.
Places like that?
Yeah. I used to spend December in Florida, and I would, because the boat was in France for June, I used to go over for June. It never came here, you see. Well, it never came to England. So after a couple of times of doing that, I said, no, I couldn't do it then, because I was teaching, you see. So I gave up teaching, and then... Again, you know, 6 or 7 years later, I said, this is silly. I'm just sitting here. The boys have left home. I'm sitting here in quite a big house, paying taxes. The boat never comes here. I have to wait for you to come home on leave. So why don't we move? So we moved.
And that's where Mallorca came into your life?
That's where Mallorca came in.
So why Mallorca? Why not anywhere else, like where your family were in France or anywhere else like that?
His brother was here in Mallorca. The boat used to come here to Mallorca and spend... a month from middle of May to middle of June, and then again in October to November. And so I'd already been coming over October to November when I'd given up teaching.
So you knew Mallorca quite well at that point.
Yeah, very well. Yeah.
So then you moved. Moved here. You renovated the house and you settled yourself in the centre of the island, where you still are.
Yep.
Still. How many years?
27.
27 years in Mallorca. Now, as far as the majority of people around here, they would know your name and they would associate you completely with music and singing for weddings and singing for charity and singing for funerals and just generally being there to sing for the English-speaking community. Can you just tell us how that all started?
It all started when I was playing golf. And I suddenly realised that I had been playing golf for 8 years, 7 or 8 years, and I missed being part of the music scene. And I was giving a lift to Barbara Hall one day, and I said, Barbara, I'm going to start a choir. And she said, there is already one, and I'm in it. I said, oh, who's that then? And she said, it's Conway Jones from the Anglican Church. So I said, oh, where does that operate from? And so anyway, she took me along. And I met Conway, and I auditioned for him. And I got in the choir.
Were you the lead?
I was a tenor.
But there's a little bird a little while ago that said you wouldn't do anything in the back row of the chorus, darling.
Well, that's different. That's different. That's different.
So you took your place amongst the choir members,
yes, I did.
And then what?
Eventually, Conway decided that doing centre stage, etc., etc., was much too much, as well as doing the choir. And so he suggested that I took the choir over. And so I did, back in 2002.
And so since then?
Well, since then, I immediately went from one rehearsal a week to two rehearsals a week. And we've done lots of things. I mean, I did bring men in at one point, and we did Messiah, and then we did a couple of other bits which needed men, but men were really very difficult. They took too long to learn anything. And so after doing Messiah for the second time, I decided that I think we ought to get rid of the men. And so gradually they drifted away and we're just back down to a ladies' choir again. And I think as a ladies' choir, we're like a great big family, and a big family who get on with everybody or don't. No, I think it's done very well. We do concerts, as you say, 3 times a year. We do concerts for charity if they want us to, as long as they arrange the place and whatever charity they are and do the organising. They're just such a good guy. They're a good gang of girls. And they all do sing very well indeed after they've been shouted at by me.
You were ahead of your time here as far as it being a very nice thing to do and a very sexy thing to do. But joining a choir is certainly considered up there now. I mean, do you think that the future of the choir is in good hands?
my hands or anybody's hands. It should be, yeah, but I'm getting on, and so I will want to retire at some time. And I do hope somebody springs up and says, well, I'll take it over, because that's what we're going to need, because I am not going to carry on forever doing this.
How many years have you been doing it, Sarah?
14.
Okay. So we'll have this conversation again in another 14 years. Can I take you back a few years to this church here that we're both looking at, the St. Bartholomew Church in the middle of Solihull Square? And so then there was a wedding for about 40 people, perhaps, sitting in the front. And considering that this is the Cathedral of the Mountains, this church is huge. So there's 40 people at the front. There's a desultory group of choir members, probably no more than a dozen, would you say?
A dozen, yeah.
And then there's D on the organ.
Yeah.
And then, because whenever you have a wedding, it's a public occasion and anyone can come into a church for a wedding, we ended up with nearly 500 people standing at the back listening. Do you remember that?
I do very well, and applauding when we finish.
And the one song that I can remember from that occasion that really sticks in mind is that Over the Rainbow.
Yeah, that's right.
So that was one of many that we have done here in Solihull. Any other venues? Yes.
We've done the Portishead, haven't we? Yeah. Twice, two or three times. Yeah. One of which was the bride was 3/4 hour late.
Tap, 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 tap.
And they brought their own Catholic priest to do the wedding. And he stood up there telling jokes while we were waiting for the bride to come. He was hysterical.
Yeah, he was really great.
And
what about all the many weddings in Daya?
Daya, one time in Daya, we might just as well have pitched a tent up there. We were there so often. Yeah.
George, you tell everyone and the whole world that's listening the story of the wedding rings and the falcon.
Oh, this was something else as well. We went to a rehearsal up there, and this man was up in the gallery in Daya, in the church in Daya, and suddenly appeared, another man had just suddenly appeared with a bird on his wrist. And this bird had been trained to fly down and sit on the arm of the other guy who was going to be standing up by the altar. And this poor bird was practicing flying down, and it was knocking itself all over the place, all over the walls, all over the windows and everything. And I thought, this is never going to do it. And I kept thinking, oh my, the poor people sitting down below. I don't like birds, you know, I really don't like birds flying around like that. And it just flew around. It was just horrible. Anyway, that's the rehearsal. We went to the wedding itself, and that bird did exactly what it was meant to do. It flew down beautifully on cue, and they took the rings off its wrist or whatever.
The claw off its claw.
And gave it to the bride and groom, and it just did its job perfectly. It was just something else. I've never seen anything like it in my life, and fortunately, nobody's ever done it since.
And then, when we came out from the church, the bird did the most wonderful, spectacular dives into the valley, which is really what it was all about, wasn't it, outside the church?
I didn't see that.
Oh, dear, I suppose you were packing up.
Probably.
Now, what about the day that Richard Branson was in our audience?
Richard Branson was there, and he thought we were absolutely stupendous. And as we went down the hill, I pulled up beside him and I said, well, aren't you going to sign us? And he just laughed.
Georgie, tell us a bit about the services that you do for the expat or the English-speaking community. So, for instance, I can remember a concert that we did at the Residencia for the Queen's 60th anniversary. Do you remember that?
Yeah, it wasn't really a concert. We just sang some really patriotic songs and things, and everyone joined in, because I always take song sheets, and if people want a song sheet, they can join in. And we sang a bit of
Land of Hope and Glory,
and all these things. Yeah, we sang those, didn't we? And it was quite good fun. Except it's out in a garden, and when it's out in a garden, the sound usually goes right up in the air, and only half a dozen people can hear you.
But this is because you're a purist. Right, so you want to be in an enclosed room so that everyone can hear the golden notes. Is this true?
It's sort of true, or else you could, as long as you've got a wall behind you, it helps, because that pushes the sound forward as well. Yes, I've got great ideas about that.
So you've got standards.
I do have standards. You know I've got standards. Goodness me. How often do I tell you how awful you people are singing?
Oh, dear. Okay, fine. Right, now we'll move on to funerals then.
For funerals, we will always do funerals. If we are able to do it, we will do a funeral. I think people should be sung out at a funeral just as well as they sung out at a wedding. And quite happy to do them, yeah. I don't like funerals, obviously, because people are sad. And if they start sobbing, then it really is awful. I sang it one. I'll never forget it. When the poor woman at the front started to sob so much, and I was singing Abide With Me. Well, I tell you, by the end of that Abide With Me, it was being sung at the fastest anyone has ever sung it in their lives, because I just wanted to get through it.
Yeah.
So no. Sad.
The amount of money that that you have raised over the years as George Insall Singers for charity, have you got any idea how much money that is?
No idea at all. I mean, we know we raise, at each of the Christmas concerts, we raise between 1,500 and 2,000 euros. But that goes to the church. We don't know how much we raise here because they never tell us, because we're not bothered, you know. We just do the singing. They can collect the money. They can do what they will with it.
So no money, lots of good voices, lots of friendship, lots of camaraderie. Does this sum up Mallorca for you?
I don't think you could put it any better than that, Shirley. I think that's quite exactly how it sums up for me. Incidentally, can I just add that we are short of a few singers at the moment. So if there are any people out there, we only need maybe a couple of sopranos and a couple of altos. We don't need more than about four or five people, but it would be nice to just supplement us a bit. We only rehearse once a week now.
And how could they contact you if they want to join your choir?
If they contact Solia Webb and Shirley, I'm sure she'd be happy to give them my telephone number.
Okay, that's absolutely true. On Solia Webb, if you go to Wedding Music Mallorca, you will find a page which will direct you and tell you the story of the George Insall Singers, and also direct you to their website and telephone number. But thank you, Georgie. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Shirley. I wish I could say the same.
That's not nice, is it? You're listening to Boat Radio. The voices you're now hear are the George Insall Singers singing All the Nice Girls Love a Sailor.
All the nice girls love a sailor. All the nice girls love a tar. Oh, there's something about a sailor. Well, you know what sailors are. Bright and breezy. Ship ahoy!